This is an ABC podcast.
This is the WA Country Hour on ABC Radio WA.
Good afternoon, Georgia Hargreaves here with you for the Country Hour today. So good to have you on board for our very feral Christmas special. Today we're going to be shining a spotlight on some of the feral animals and invasive species that are not only a pain in the backside for WA producers, but a pain in the back pocket too. And after midday, you'll hear a detailed weather forecast from the Bureau of Meteorology with what you can expect on Christmas and beyond. And make sure you stick around to hear a very special Christmas song. That's coming up between now and 1 o'clock. Now, for pastoralists in our state's rangelands, camels continually rate as one of the most destructive pests. Australia has the world's largest feral camel population, with estimates of numbers varying widely, but it's potentially up to 3 million. For Tim Carmody from Parenti Downs Station near Wiluna, camels are a problem that could also be part of a solution.
11 years ago, we purchased Parenti Downs Station. And one of our big challenges to start with was the control of ferals. And the big ferals we had here, large feral herbivores, were camel, horse and donkey. And we'd taken out, I think it's between 14 and 16,000 camel in that time. And this animal is the ship of the desert, as everyone knows. And they can eat about 80% of the forage out here. So this significantly impacts on the biodiversity, and they, believe it or not, they do have to drink water, and this takes them into the natural water points, and we have seen in the natural water points where they absolutely destroy them.
Are some years worse than others for camels, Tim?
Most definitely. Without question, what happens is the camel go back out into the centre and breed up when there is wet seasons out there. When there's adequate water out in the centre, they don't come out onto the fringes. And that's quite natural, because when they come onto the fringes, they get hunted, shooed and pushed by vehicles and shooters as they create huge damage.
So as you head into the really hot part of the year, what are the numbers looking like this summer?
The station to the north of us, they're shooting at the moment about 150 a week. And that will only increase if it stays dry. I've been talking to a couple of other station owners further around towards the north, to the northwest, and they're seeing numbers coming through already. We're not seeing a lot here because we've taken out significant numbers, which we believe are sort of on a migratory that come through Prenti. And so we're not getting big numbers here at the moment, but our neighbour to the west is getting significant numbers as well.
So talk to us about those current control measures that you're using or you have used in the last 11 years.
Method is we carry a firearm with us, and I repeat, a firearm, not a weapon. And we shoot on site all camel we see. And if we're getting mobs, we put a plane up and the plane spots and pulls the camel up for the ground vehicle to come and control. We can control up to or any number as long as we've got the amount of ammunition with us. But typically we'll get a mob of 50 to 80 when they're in the early days, and we'll take the whole mob out. And the reason we can take the whole mob out is we shoot, the aircraft brings the vehicle on, we shoot again and keep that process going until we've removed all the mob.
And I understand recently you've also had a pet meat operator who has started a small commercial operation as well on the station.
Yes, there's a gentleman from Albany who's been coming up. And it's been over the last five, 6 years now. He's been doing it to develop an alternative, another meat product for pet food. And it's a lot slower process because we have to find a mob, then put the mob on the ground. Then they have to be cut up to a point where they can go back to the processing units or unit and then repeat again. We can take probably in a day doing it that way about 35, 40 at tops.
And is this something that you think could be done on a bigger scale or, you know, across more of the area? Or is it just a case of right now logistics limit what you can do?
Logistics is what regional and regional remote Western Australia or Australia is all about. It doesn't matter whether it's our minerals, our cattle, our sheep, our grain. Logistics impacts all of it. And I believe that this, the camel industry, and I have stated this many times, could be significantly increased if we had better logistics into the centre of Western Australia and into South Australia, Northern Territory. I'm speaking specifically about the Great Central Road. I don't understand why it hasn't been completed and sealed, and then this would operate, open up and permit an operation of both the feral and any domestic that wanted to be run as well.
And at the moment, as you say, that operator from Albany is coming up for the pet meat industry, but could there be a human consumption industry of camel meat at some stage as well, Tim, do you believe?
Not believe, I know. There is already a small industry operating with about 3,000 camel coming out of Surveyor's Corner, that region area, per year. And it's been taken down into South Australia to be processed. The issue is logistics, but this operation has been running now, I believe, for about 10 years. If the logistics road systems could be opened up, then we could significantly decrease the number of camel that are roaming free out there, and in turn make the industry of camel that is there, even though they're feral, be more viable, have a higher level of viability. And this would then, again, reduce the number and diversify the business opportunities out in the centre, that triangle, the Surveyor's Corner. And there could be cattle operations running there as well with both.
Well, that being said, Tim, we're coming up to Christmas. People are thinking about what they're going to be putting on that lunch table. Maybe it's a roast pork or maybe it's a roast turkey. Will roast camel be on your lunch table this Christmas?
Probably not on our table this Christmas. We do eat a lot of camel, and it's a bit like eating veal. This is going to sound strange, but I don't think I could find one at the moment on our place. We've done a pretty good job of lightening their numbers. We have, I think people know we have, and we do eat camel.
I know personally they make a good spaghetti bolognese, Tim, especially the younger ones.
Most definitely camel meat. There is no reason why camel is not eaten for both pet or human consumption.
You're heading into a rather potentially warm Christmas day. Temperatures well into the 40s at the moment at Prenti Downs. What are you going to do to stay cool?
Well, we sort of start early in the day and finish early in the day, so I can quite easily move having a beer to breakfast time. I would like to wish everyone in the Goldfields Esperance region a very safe and happy Christmas. And let's keep doing the wonderful work we do in regional Australia.
Tim Carmody from Prenti Downs Station near Wiluna. He was speaking with Tara de Langraft. I want to know, have you tried camel meat before? 0448 922 604. I definitely have not tried it, but Christmas camel just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? Maybe it should be on the menu tomorrow. It's 12:15 on the Country Hour this afternoon. Let's head to the Great Southern region, where a multi-million dollar proposal for a gold mine about 40 kilometres northeast of Katanning is now being assessed by WA's environmental watchdog. The Environmental Protection Authority says Ausgold's proposal includes the disturbance of nearly 60 hectares of native vegetation over a 10-year mine life, with 0.4 gigalitres of water expected to be removed from the mine's open pit excavation each year. Peter Kerrin farms 16 kilometres northeast of Katanning and says the road to the mine site goes right through the guts of his property. But, as you'll hear, Peter thinks overall the gold mine will be good for the town.
Well, I think it's a great thing for Katanning and district. It's going to provide quite a bit of employment and perhaps keep our town booming a bit more than it currently is. But as regards the environmental side of it, I know there's been a bit of noise made about it, but I don't know that there's much grounds for it, but we'll see what the EPA has to say for it. But from a personal point of view, I can't see much real problem with it.
No doubt this project has been the topic of discussion around many dinner tables in Katanning. What are other farmers or other community members telling you about it? Are people on the same page, or do they have concerns with it?
I think the majority of people are on the same page. There's obviously some people that's going to cause some issues in and around the mine, but for us away from it, there's not a great deal of issue, I don't think, other than perhaps roads, how they're going to stand up with the increased traffic, but that's an issue that I'm sure the Shire are going to deal with.
Your farm is located on the way from between Katanning town site and the proposal site.
Yep.
Have you been consulted by Ausgold, or do you feel like there has been enough information given to farmers who are quite close to the proposal site?
We have not been consulted, not that I think there's any great need for it, but those adjacent to, I don't know what their consultation has been there, but no, there's no real drama as far as we're concerned, other than the increased traffic. And I suppose one thing we're thankful for is we no longer have got sheep, and we used to drive sheep across and along the road, and you've got people that are not familiar with sheep movements, that could have caused problems, but that won't cause us any grief now.
What do you hope the project brings to town? Because obviously it's 40 k's away from Katanning, but no doubt there will be impacts on the town. What do you hope it leads to?
Speaking with the manager the other day, he was saying that they're going to build accommodation for 250 people, and hopefully there'll be some spin-off from that. There won't be just drive-in, drive-out, all of them. I know housing is at a real shortage at present, so that's probably an indication that people might be thinking about long-term, staying here for the long term. It's going to obviously have some influence on our businesses in town, which is great for them. Yeah, I think that it's just great for the town.
Peter, you wrapped up harvest about a week ago. How was the season for you?
Oh, it was very good. Yes, I think, well, on all counts, it was the best we've ever had. Not as good as some of the stories you hear about, but we're more than happy with it. It was a very good result in the end.
Yeah. I'm so glad to hear about that. You deserve a good old break with your family, Peter, that's for sure. What are you doing for Christmas?
Well, my wife and I are heading to Albany to be with my daughter. One of my sons have gone to Melbourne, the other one's gone to Dongara, so we're spread out fairly well for the Christmas. I just hope that we look forward to another good year. We've been very, very fortunate in this area over the years to have good years. This is, as I said, was the best we've had. And just a nice opening rain in about early April would be very nice.
And on the Country Hour today, we are putting a bit of a spotlight on a very feral Christmas, where we're talking about the feral animals and the pests that are big pains in the behinds for producers such as yourself. What feral animal or pest gives you the most grief, Peter?
Well, we saw a few foxes during harvest, but I know probably get into trouble for corn and feral, but kangaroos are a big problem. We butt up against a 4,500-acre reserve, and there's no effort made by anyone to control the kangaroos. They're a pest within their crops and also on the roads for those people travelling. Not so much us, it's more people travelling past our place on the east side, and there's a lot of roos around. They're a real pain. That's our main issue.
Katanning crop farmer Peter Karen speaking with Amelia Searson. And yes, a good reminder to keep an eye out for roos if you're driving home somewhere this Christmas. And this text has just come through from Alex. This is in reference to what you heard earlier on feral camels in WA. Alex says, when Kevin Rudd was Prime Minister, a central Aboriginal community in the Territory attempted to regenerate an abattoir for camel meat products. They required $7 million to complete the task, but Kevin Rudd said no. The abattoir never recovered. Thanks for that text, Alex. 20 past 12 on the Country Hour this afternoon. Now, conditions are looking hot, dry and possibly gusty in parts of the Southwest Land Division for Christmas. But up north, the monsoon season is kicking in. More rain in the Kimberley in the last 24 hours. But Justin Dyer is on Hayfield Station in the Northern Territory, which is about 600 kilometres south of Darwin. They've had a great start to the monsoon season with some very welcome rain in the last week. So Christmas is shaping up to be a beauty.
Oh, wow, we've had a fabulous bit of rain here just in the last week. Measured another 27 this morning and still drizzling. I think we had 25, 21 the day before that, and another inch before, sort of in a few days before that. So, yeah, no, brilliant follow-up. It's really been a good start, I think, for us here. Just beautiful here now, nice and cool. It's been cool for over a week, so that's helped the job, that's for sure. No, it's a really good start, really good start. Great to see a green Christmas.
So that is a very nice Christmas present for Hayfield Station. How's tomorrow looking at your place?
Oh, I think we've got 15 or 17 for lunch. So, yeah, we'll get Lisa and the Sturt crew are up and a few of our staff are here and some friends. So looking forward to it. Got my prawns in order in early this year. I think Brad might be bringing up a few oysters. So, yeah, no, it's looking good. Sal's in a cooking frenzy at the moment, making trifles and everything else. So, yeah, we'll shaping up to be a cracker, I reckon. Nice and cool. So be a bit of outside badminton and cricket action, I reckon. We've got enough to field a side, I think.
The HCG, the Hayfield Cricket Ground, it's you'll be able to get a game in. It's not too wet for that.
No, it's not. It's just ideal, I reckon. Bit of softness underfoot. No huge puddles though. I'm looking out over the HCG here now. Now it's looking good. If we can keep it like this, it'll be ideal.
Beautiful. And just finally, as a cattle producer, how are you feeling about 2026?
Oh, pretty bullish, Matt, for sure. Yeah, the domestic market is red hot. Live jobs as good as it gets at the moment. So, yeah, hopefully it flows through to next year, and I'm sure it will.
I think if you've got green grass and you've got cattle to sell, surely next year is a good one for you, I would have thought.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, hoping we get a good opening rate for the live export job and it stays firm throughout the busy period of the year. That would be ideal.
Yeah. Well, I hope the wet season treats you well and to your whole family, have a wonderful Christmas.
Yeah, good on you, Matt. Appreciate that. You too. And Merry Christmas to all the listeners out there as well.
Justin Dyer is on Hayfield Station over in the Northern Territory, which is about halfway between Elliot and Daly Waters. And he was catching up with NT Country Hour presenter Matt Brann. It's 24 past 12. You're listening to the Country Hour this afternoon. Now, if you're planning on buying prawns for Christmas, are you going to get shell on or pre-peeled? Well, the Marine Stewardship Council has been doing some research into our prawn consumption habits, and it's found that for most of us, convenience is more important than price or sustainability. The council's Dr. Adrian Guttridge explains.
60% of Aussies will prefer to buy pre-peeled prawns so they don't have to do it themselves. which is something that, you know, my household, I grew up in a place where you peel your prawns and that's the ones you eat. So the more you peel, the more you eat. But yeah, from Marine Stewardship Council's perspective, one of the other interesting findings was that even though, you know, 60% of people are looking for pre-peeled prawns, only about 16% are actually bringing sustainability into their sort of purchasing sphere when they're going to buy prawns. And, you know, from our perspective, we'd love to see that get higher, because at the moment there's about 2/3 of wild caught prawns in Australia that carry the MSC blue fish tick label. So it's kind of never been easier to buy sustainable prawns. So that's what we're really kind of pushing this year for people to do.
So yeah, so when people go into the supermarket or the fish market or wherever they're buying their prawns from, whether it's frozen or fresh, there are, as you say, there are a number, a decent number that have that certification that people could be choosing from.
Yeah, that's right. And you can do that in your local supermarket or your fishmonger. And a thing to remember is your most powerful conservation tool is your wallet. And so the purchasing power you have really sends messages to fisheries and organisations and companies about what you're actually wanting out of those products. And yeah, for people, we're just saying, you know, the blue fish tick MSC logo is a really easy way to identify that that prawn or seafood product, whatever it is, comes from a sustainable fishery. And that is, you know, the number one thing we're asking Aussies to do this year when it comes to buying prawns.
So I'm looking at that tick, that label on a fish product or prawns or whatever it is. Yep. Essentially, what does that mean? What is that telling me as a consumer? What's it guaranteeing me?
Well, it's guaranteeing you that that fishery has gone through a really rigorous process to demonstrate sustainability. So the MSC is a third-party independent certification scheme. And to carry that blue fish tick label, that fishery needs to demonstrate three key things. The first is that the target species, the thing that's carrying that blue fish tick, is in a sustainable manner, and it's been demonstrated to stay there this generation and generations to come. The second thing is that the impacts of the wider ecosystem are low, such that it's not going to drive potentially bycatch species, for example, into oblivion. And the third is that they've got really strong management in place to give you all that kind of information. So the MSC is sort of the most rigorous independent sustainability certification in the world. So it really is, you know, a really high bar for sustainability and the kind of things that people can be, you know, certain that they're buying from a really well-managed fishery and a fishery that's doing the right thing to kind of ensure that that resource is here, not for this Christmas, but also, you know, all Christmases to come.
It's interesting looking at some of these purchasing trends, and you might think, well, is it a cost thing? Because of a cost of living crisis, people are still buying prawns, but maybe they're looking for the slightly cheaper option. So they might be some of your more imported varieties, or maybe they're ones that, you know, for some reason, whatever reason, they're not signed up to this program. Do you think that might be what consumers are looking for first?
Yeah, perhaps. And I mean, I guess contrary to that idea that the cost of living crisis is making people choose cheaper options, like, it's actually more expensive to buy pre-peeled prawns. So, you know, that kind of shows that the convenience of, you know, not having to deal with, I guess, shells and heads once you get home is probably more factoring in that purchasing thing. But, you know, when it comes to imported versus, you know, Australian wild caught prawns, you know, the price difference isn't going to be all that much different, especially at, you know, your kind of bigger supermarkets. And, you know, I guess the thing that would differentiate my purchasing, for example, is knowing that the prawns that are Australian caught, wild caught, carrying the MSC blue fish tick label, you know, that fishery is in our own waters. They're really well managed. And yeah, I guess if that kind of cost of imported prawns is coming into it, the thing I would just ask people to do is just consider where that's come from and what that regulation might be in another country, because, you know, they're unlikely to be in the same kind of realm that Australia's wild caught prawns are.
Dr. Adrian Guttridge is the Senior Fisheries Standards Manager at the Marine Stewardship Council, and he was speaking with Selena Green. It is 29 past 12. We've got no news headlines today, but we'll be off to the Bureau of Meteorology for an update very shortly. First, though, I've got this text that's come in from Peter. Now, I don't know if this is Peter from Katanning, who was just sort of saying that there's kangaroos have been causing a bit of
trouble for them out there. But Peter's texted in with just a photo of the T-shirt he's got on, and it's a road sign with a big kangaroo in the middle, and it says, "No kangaroos in Austria." Thanks for that, Peter. That'd make a good Chrissy gift for someone going to Europe, I reckon. All right, let's head off to the Bureau of Meteorology. Today we've got Angeline Prasad with us. Angeline, hello.
Hi there, Georgia.
How are things looking? Let's start off in the north of the state. Can you take us through what we can expect not only on Christmas Day, but also looking ahead to next week?
So we do have a broad area of low pressure across the north, but it's moved closer to the Pilbara and Kimberley coasts. So we're seeing this a bit of a drier easterly flow developing through inland areas. There's still plenty of showers and thunderstorms across the Kimberley and the Pilbara today. But it does become a bit more isolated over the next few days. So as you know, that the monsoon is developing across the tropics, so through the top end and across northern, far north Queensland. And as a result of that, we might see some dry air on the back end of this developing monsoon trough. So it basically means that the showers and thunderstorms will become a little bit more isolated. We've seen some really good falls through the northern districts over the last few days, but with that slightly drier flow, we'll see a bit of a calming in the showers and thunderstorms. Apart from that, temperature-wise, it has been quite hot through the Pilbara and the Kimberley. Not so much, through the Pilbara and the North Interior. Not so much in the Kimberley, but we have seen a slight easing in those very hot temperatures. Not a whole lot. So we'll continue to see a low intensity heat wave bubble through these two districts over the next few days, including Christmas and heading into the long weekend. But yes, temperatures generally through the Kimberley will be slightly below average. So still quite warm for this time of the year, and that little bit of cloud cover will help to keep things ticking along. Apart from that, we are keeping a close eye on a tropical low that may form well off to the northwest of the Kimberley coast over the next few days, most likely during the weekend. It's a result of the monsoon trough developing to the north of us. At this stage, there's a lot of uncertainty on what this tropical low may do in the last week of the year. So keep an eye on any updates in the system. If it does develop, it's going to be a while. So it's going to take a few days to develop. If it does, there's a lot of uncertainty on where it may be located. It may be located closer to Indonesia, or it may move closer to the northwest Kimberley coast next week, or even the north Pilbara coast. But we'll keep you updated on how the system evolves over the next few days.
One to keep an eye on then. How are things looking in the south of the state?
Yes, very challenging conditions today and into tomorrow. So we have got a west coast trough that has moved offshore. So it is deepening offshore today. We've got a quite a firm ridge of high pressure across southern WA. And as a result, or a combination of these two weather patterns, this combination is causing very hot and gusty winds extending into the southwest. So we're seeing those very hot temperatures, daytime temperatures over the next couple of days. We're seeing a fair amount of heat in the atmosphere. So we have got a severe heat wave warning out for parts of the southwest. We're looking at fire weather warnings. So extreme fire dangers are possible across the western districts today and into tomorrow as that trough offshore deepens. Now tomorrow during Christmas Day, the ridge does start to move eastwards, and that allows the trough to move closer to the west coast. Now today, we will see some dry thunderstorms through the Midwest, so through the Gascoyne and extending to the northern parts of the central west. Not expecting much rainfall. Now these thunderstorm areas will extend all the way down to south of Perth, so extend potentially all the way down to Harvey and to the northwest of Meriden in the central wheat belt. And again, similar to today, I'm not expecting rainfall with these dry thunderstorms, they're most likely going to be sort of around lunchtime into the afternoon, and there will be here and there, so it's not going to be as extensive as what we saw a couple of weeks ago when we saw the last outbreak of thunderstorms, but there's a risk that we could see dry thunderstorms tomorrow. So heat, windy conditions, that risk of lightning, dry lightning in the landscape tomorrow is could potentially cause quite a dangerous situation where we could see wildfires ignite in the landscape. So tomorrow is going to be particularly trying in terms of weather conditions. Now, the trough, as I mentioned, does move close to the west coast tomorrow. So we will see a westerly change develop on the west coast during tomorrow afternoon. And the trough is expected to move inland to the hills later tomorrow evening and then progress eastwards. So Friday is going to be another challenging day for inland parts of the Southwest Land Division and along the south coast. So we're seeing the heat peaking along the west coast today and tomorrow. The heat will peak through inland parts of the Southwest Land Division and the south coast on Friday. So Friday is going to be, it may potentially be more challenging because there will be a wind change associated with the trough moving inland. There is a weak cold front that's coming through that's going to help direct this wind change. So conditions to the west of that this trough and with that cold front will be much milder. We'll see a few light showers. But east of this trough and along the trough, we will continue to see those drier thunderstorms, very hot temperatures, and also elevated fire dangers. So the area of concern on Friday would be through the Esperance region. And then over the weekend, as that trough continues to move inland, we'll see a ridge move in across the southwest, and we'll see much more benign conditions extend across much of southern WA. But the next couple of days will be quite challenging in terms of weather.
Georgia. And look, just very quickly before you go, looking ahead to the weekend and early next week, I'm just sort of thinking of anyone who may be either still harvesting or potentially fighting fires. What's mm-hmm. coming in terms of rainfall in the south?
So rainfall with these thunderstorms is going to be minimal, the dry thunderstorms that I have mentioned. Today and tomorrow, I'm not expecting much rainfall. If anything, you know, if the thunderstorms do produce any rainfall, it's going to be 1 to 2 millimeters in the areas I have mentioned. The Gascoyne might see a little bit more inland parts, sort of between Mount Magnet and Micarthur, might see a little bit more, maybe up to 5 millimeters tomorrow. Now on Friday, The front itself might bring a couple of millimeters along the south coast. Again, not much. And through inland areas, it's just going to be a couple of millimeters again. So, again, mostly on the dry side. And then the rainfall just peters out, so I'm not going to see much rainfall. There might be a little bit more rainfall through the goldfields in the Eucla region over the weekend, but it's a bit uncertain how much we could see as the trough continues to push further inland. But elsewhere, it's going to be quite minimal.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the update, Angeline, and hope you have a very Merry Christmas.
I will be working. So, yes, we're planning on a big Christmas lunch at work. So, yes, Merry Christmas to you as well.
Enjoy. It is 20 to 1 on the Country Hour this afternoon. Richard Hudson, what's happening with the rainfall?
Oh, you got a feel for Angeline and the team at the Bureau having Christmas Day and actually working like a lot of other people as well, but they do a good job. Yeah, the only rain worth mentioning is in the Kimberley, as you'd imagine. Bedford Downs had 14 mils, Diggers Rest 10, Doongan 5, Ellenbrae 22, Faraway Bay 9, Gibb River 22, Halls Creek 5, Kachana 13, Lumberoo 31, Kununurra 42, Lansdowne 8, Leopold Downs 7, Mount Krause 5, Theta 12, Troughton Island 51, and Truscott had 8 mils, and Yampi Sound 62 actually. Due to the conditions that Angeline was just talking about and the extreme fire danger today, a number of shires have total fire bans in place, mainly in the Midwest and Wheat Belt, and also some areas closer to Perth and east and northeast of Perth. So I'll quickly go through them. These are the shires shires of Carnamar, Chapman Valley, Chittering, Karoo, Dandaragan, Greater Geraldton, Gingin, Irwin, Mingenew, Mora, Morowa, Mundaring, Northampton, Perenjori, Swan, Three Springs, 2J and Victoria Plains. If you missed that and you're not sure, it's easy to find all the details on the Emergency WA website. Just search those two things, Emergency and WA. It's all on the homepage, easy to find, including details of what you can and can't do during a total fire ban. Just remember, it's your responsibility to check if your local government has a harvest vehicle and movement ban. And the current, these shires do have a harvest ban in place. Boyup Brook, Chittering, City of Greater Geraldton and Mullawar, Mundaring, Nanup and Swan. So they all have harvest bans in place today. You need to check with your shire to see if they are likely to remove those harvest bans. And just a reminder that all shires have a total fire ban and harvest ban in place for Christmas Day. That's for obvious reasons.
Thank you, Richard. Now, it is Christmas Eve, and over the last few years, you have finished our last Country Hour show before Christmas with some sort of special festive tune. I think some people are still trying to erase the memory of the goats singing Silent Night. Now, do you have anything lined up this year?
Yeah, we do. I think it's another Christmas song that very few people will have heard, but hopefully they can enjoy. But you would not believe this. While searching, this is genuine, I accidentally came across something that brought a massive smile to my face. It's a Christmas song sung by my eldest daughter. This is only short, but I recorded this years ago.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw it, you wouldn't say it glows. All of the other reindeers used to love calling names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer game. Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say, Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight? Then how the reindeers loved him, and they shouted out with glee, Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer, you could hear this story.
So that was by your eldest daughter, who is now old. How old, Richard?
She's 19, so it's Sienna. Not lacking confidence, despite the sniffle. She went on to do musical theatre at her high school.
Old was she when you did the recording?
I can't even remember. I reckon she must have been pre-primary, so four-ish, five-ish. Yeah, I have no idea.
Hopefully she's not mortified that was put on the Country
Hour. Oh, no. That mortified doesn't come into her character. If you're putting her on stage, she's fine.
I love that. Now, any hints on the song that will close out today's show just before one?
All I can say, maybe it features another animal, but it also features some classic country instruments, put it that way.
Okay. As long as it doesn't make my ears bleed, I'll be happy. Thank you for that, Richard. Now, on the program, we've been talking about what people are cooking up this Christmas. Maybe it's turkey, crayfish, prawns, but how about cane toads? If you're in the Pilbara like me, you don't have to go far to find them because the invasive species are slowly making their way down the Kimberley towards us. Curtin University Professor Ben Phillips was part of a study which found cane toads will colonise up to 75% of the Pilbara in the next 30 years if nothing is done to contain them.
Yeah, so over the last 15 years, cane toads have invaded the entirety of Australia's Kimberley region, and they're set to continue spreading. So what our paper looks at is, you know, what's likely to happen from here. And if we do nothing, what's likely to happen is that the toads will continue to invade all the way to Broome, then they'll turn left and head down the coast and eventually arrive in the Pilbara.
You mentioned the cane toads have already invaded the Kimberley. Where is the cane toad frontline in WA at the moment?
Yeah, so the toads are basically between Derby and Broome. So they've crossed the Fitzroy River, so they've invaded all of the Kimberley region, except the little area between Broome and Derby, which they're filling up quite rapidly at the moment. So they're likely to be in Broome in about probably 3 years.
And when could the toads move into the Pilbara?
That's less clear. So the modelling we did basically comes up with a wide range of estimates about how long that will take to get to the Pilbara. That all the models say that they will definitely get there if we don't do anything. But the timing of that gets more and more uncertain the further we go away from where they currently are, if that makes sense. So it's kind of anywhere between 10 and 30 years.
Is there anything that can be done to prevent the incursion?
Yeah, look, we're working very hard right now on an idea that we're calling the toad containment zone. And that is a plan to stop them between Broome and Port Hedland. So between Broome and Port Hedland, the Great Sandy Desert hits the coast. And so the desert is too dry for toads, but there's this narrow strip along the coast there between Broome and Port Hedland where there's kind of enough water in the landscape for pastoralists to make a living, and the pastoralists have brought up lots of water for watering their cattle. And a lot of that infrastructure leaked. As a consequence, that infrastructure will provide habitat for toads, and that is how that they will be able to spread from the Kimberley down to the Pilbara, through that narrow corridor. But that also gives us an opportunity to work with pastoralists and with Indigenous landowners in that area to upgrade that pastoral infrastructure in a way that's not available to toads. We can kind of create a large break in the landscape. There's very little natural water in this part of the world. And so every wet season, the toads, it'll rain and the toads will move and they'll spread into this area. But every dry season, they're going to need to find permanent water. And if we've controlled the water in such a way that it's not available to the toads, then they'll, of course, they'll perish and they'll be pushed back to the top of this toad containment zone. So we're working very hard right now. It's a really exciting partnership that's coming together between pastoralists, Indigenous landowners and scientists and industry around building this toad containment zone and ideally preventing toads ever getting to the Pilbara.
Some academics have previously suggested we eat cane toads to help reduce numbers. What do you think of this as a strategy?
Well, I think eating cane toads, it's not probably the most attractive food to many people. There's, of course, some risk that you might poison yourself quite badly in the process if you didn't prepare them carefully. So there's that side of it to consider. I think more generally, though, the idea that you can eat an invasive species into some kind of sensible level of control, it just doesn't play out in the real world. It's very difficult to harvest invasive species to the level where it actually helps. So in the case of toads, for example, even a very low density of toads in the landscape will have all of the impacts. And collecting enough toads is a very, very, very big job. So I think actually it would have effectively no effect whatsoever.
There was an ABC TV show called Eat the Invaders, which this year featured a Northern Territory tour guide named David McMahon, who cooks and eats cane toads. Given everything you know about them, do you think you would eat them?
Well, I've worked on toads for a very long time and I have not ever tried one. So I guess that's the answer to the question. There's definitely a little bit of meat on the back legs if you're so inclined, but I've never found it an appealing proposition.
So that sounds like a definite no to having cane toads on the menu this Christmas. That was Professor of Population and Biology at Curtin University, Ben Phillips. He was speaking with Jess Baker. It's 12 to 1 on the Country Hour this afternoon. You've got me, Georgia Hargreaves, with you from now until 1 o'clock. So as you've just heard, cane toads are making their way further south. But I want to know, how far north do rabbits go? Where have you seen them get to? I'm not from the north, so I've got no idea. 0448 922604 is the number. Now, Kyle Wilson is a gold prospector based here in Karratha. He's travelled all around northern WA and even across to the Northern Territory. Kyle, how far north have you seen rabbits?
Look, the furthest north I have seen rabbits is at Oski Roadhouse on the Great Northern Highway. And, I mean, it stood out to me because it really is a long way north and probably the furthest north I've ever seen rabbits.
And that's in the Pilbara, isn't it? Just out of Newman, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So Oski Roadhouse is one of the roadhouses that sit, well, I think it's the only roadhouse actually that sits in between Port Hedland and Newman on the Great Northern Highway.
And so what exactly did you see at the roadhouse? How many rabbits were there?
Well, it definitely wasn't just one. There was a lot. I probably reckon there would have been north of 100 of them, which was really wild to me. They were all throughout the roadhouse, in amongst the caravan park, and they were thriving. They weren't just surviving.
Yeah. So did that surprise you to see rabbits all the way up there?
Look, in terms of distribution, absolutely. Like, I've never seen rabbits that far north before. I'm a Midwest boy, and I grew up with rabbits, you know, in my younger days, but definitely hadn't seen them that far north. I guess it kind of makes sense in a way, though, because there's a constant water source up there for them. There's disturbed ground, so there's, like, lots of clearing and infrastructure around the place, and there's shelter in and around the buildings and the embankments. So, you know, even though they're way out of their distribution, in terms of habitat, it's a great little spot for them to thrive.
Yeah, okay. Sounds like a little oasis out there in the outback. Now, I want to know, you've spent a lot of time on the road as a gold prospector, I imagine, and you must get pretty creative with dinners. Have you eaten rabbit before?
I have eaten rabbit before, and the way that I refer to a rabbit is the good old ground chicken. They're a little bit tough. They're definitely not as tender as your chook, but if you put them in a slow cooker with a few little different bits and pieces and some herbs and spices, they go all right.
Okay, yum. I'm getting a bit hungry just thinking about that. So with that in mind then, is rabbit going to be on the menu this Christmas?
Yeah, look, being all the way up in Karratha and a little further away from where they normally be, no, not this year.
Maybe one for next year then.
Maybe next year.
Kyle, thank you so much for coming on to the WA Country Hour today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Pilbara gold prospector Kyle Wilson, and he was saying he's seen rabbits living at the Oski Roadhouse, which is about a 15-hour drive north of Perth, and it's here in the Pilbara. 9 minutes to one on the Country Hour this afternoon. Now, it's a bumper crop for grain growers this year, but beekeepers are also in the middle of a very good season. Trees like Jarrah have had lots of flowers over the past few months, and the Marri and Blackbutt are also expected to be loaded with blooms in the coming weeks. Kim Fuster is a fourth-generation beekeeper based near Perth. He says the wet winter of this year will result in a lot of nectar and happy bees.
So we've just finished moving our hives from Capel up into the northern Jarrah forest for this year's Jarrah crop. This year, due to all the rain, it's looking really good. Very, very good season this year. The last 2 years have been probably our worst 2 years we've had in the last 25 years, I would think, because of very low rainfall. The bees have suffered and honey production suffered. With the pollination contract, that helps. It eases up the ups and downs in the income.
Yeah, it's another revenue stream, yes. Isn't it?
Yeah, so most beekeepers in the Western world now, they gear up to pollinate crops every year. So that's what we do now. And even in Western Australia, there's so many new crops coming, avocados, kiwi fruit, almonds, cherries, apples, of course, that all need bees. So nearly every beehive in WA is on pollination through October and November, whether it's on kiwi fruit or even watermelons now.
So you've finished the pollination work now, and you're now going into the woodlands with your bees, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So the Jarrah forest, it basically flowers every 4 years. That's when we have a good flowering. Every 2 years we might get a half a crop. And every year we might get some, but every 4 years it's a very good crop. And this year is a good year because, as we know, one of the wettest winters we've had for a long time. Mother Nature likes wet winters, so all the trees are looking good. And then from the Jarrah, when that finishes about middle of January, the red gum or the Marri, that'll flower very good this year in the same regions. So all our honey will be, from now on, will all be organic because it's all from the old forest. And then there's another tree which grows along in the hollows called the black butt. That's going to flower as well, but that'll flower at overlaps both the Jarrah and the red gum. Mm-hmm. So the Jarrah and the black butt are two very high value honeys. We get a premium for in WA.
And expecting a really good season this year from those trees because of all the rain. That must be pretty exciting, putting the bees out knowing that there's going to be that much pollen there.
Well, that's right. Yeah, the bees are looking superb. They've been getting honey now since the spring. The spring was a very good spring. after 2 years where there wasn't very much honey at all, you know, this is what you go beekeeping for, this years like this, you know. And like most farmers, you know, you always think of the bumper crop, don't think about the other ones. You might as well go fishing when there's nothing happening. So, yeah.
And the thing with you is you know this is going to be a bumper crop, so you can kind of predict the future a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's right. So being a good beekeeper basically is know where you're going to be in 12 months' time. So, you know, or 2 years' time, but in some circumstances. So we know that, you know, this time next year what we'll be doing. It won't be the Jarrah. Like I said, all our management now is to produce good bees for our pollination contract. And then, of course, when there's good crops, we can get good crops of honey off as well. Honey is roughly $4.70 a kilo, so it's not back up to where it was 4 years ago, mainly due to, yeah, there's so much imported honey coming in now. I think the last record we saw was about 12,500 to 13,000 tonne of honey coming in from overseas, imported honey.
So what is demand like for your honey here in WA, Kim?
It's gone up, of course, but the I think the average consumption is 400 grams per year per person in WA, which is still ridiculously low. We've been advertising on radio to try and get the average up, to get more people to consume honey. You just don't have it on toast. You can have it in drinks. You can have it in cocktails. One of our customers in Japan, he's got a wine bar. They put it in the bottom of red wine, so it takes the bitterness or the tartiness out of the red wine. That's the Jarrah honey.
Oh, there's an idea. Honey in red wine. Haven't tried that one before. Kim Fuster, he is a beekeeper, and he was speaking with Joe Prendergast. It's 4 minutes to one. You're listening to The Country Hour this afternoon, and this text has come in from Ben, just talking about how far north you've seen rabbits. Ben says he saw rabbits on Quabba Station, which is up from Carnarvon. Thanks for that, Ben. And looks like that's it for our pre-Christmas show, which means it's time for our executive producer to inflict some of his music on you. Richard Hudson, what do you have for us?
Well, I'd mentioned it's got a little bit of the animals in there. No goats, no toads, no rabbits or roos, but it does have some pretty special lyrics. I think she'd hit play. Fleck and the Flecktones with their version of Jingle Bells. They're an American jazz fusion Grammy Award-winning band from Nashville, Tennessee. On behalf of the Country Hour team, make sure you stay safe, stay away from the matches, and from Uncle Dave, of course. He gets a bit feral at Christmas, but have a great Chrissy.
Thank you for that, Richard. Yes, take care over the break. I'm Georgia Hargreaves. It's been great having you along for the Country Hour this week. Have a very Merry Christmas, and hopefully you can enjoy your days off. It's 1 o'clock.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.